Grainger knows when you're a procurement manager for an office park, you're not managing one building. You're managing all of them. And to stay ahead, you need to see through walls and around corners. Lights about to fail, filters ready to clog, HVAC on its last leg. If you wait until something breaks, you're already behind. Count on Grainger for quality products, easy reordering, and 24/7 support. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, assalamu alaikum, America. Wow, what a story coming out of Michigan today. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. So just moments ago, the numbers coming in, it's taken them a very long time to count the ballots there in Michigan. I think they were actually waiting on the Detroit vote, but it looks like that they've officially got a winner here. And he's a pretty dangerous guy. I mean, this is nothing more than a continuation of the leftward lurch of the Democrat Party. So anyway, Haley Stevens, she went down in defeat. I'm kind of disappointed over that. I think Melissa McCarthy would have done a great job on SNL with the Haley Stevens impressions. Anyway, Haley Stevens, the moderate in the race, if you can call a Democrat a moderate, she went down in defeat, and this is a massive win for the communists that are now controlling the Democrat Party. Abdul El-Sayed will be their candidate for the U.S. Senate. Mike Rogers, former congressman in Michigan, he's going to be he ran unopposed in the Republican primary. Anyway, says El-Sayed is way too extreme for Michigan. He says Abdul is his own special sauce of crazy. That coming as a reaction just a little while ago. They're making it official. And look, I mean, this guy is a Muslim. He hates America. It says America is a racist nation, by the way. Ole Abdul, not a big fan of the U.S. of A. As a matter of fact, this is Abdul talking about how he's going to be running the race. Cut number 26, please.
We need Democrats who have the courage to stand up to the power brokers in our own party, let alone Trump and his goons. We don't back down. We don't back down. We don't back down. With all due respect, if they go low, we don't go high. We take them to the mud and choke them out.
Spoken like a true Muslim. So there you go. Abdul El-Sayed. By the way, you know, these Democrats, they are a violent bunch. Have you noticed that? Have you picked up on that? They love the violence. If they don't get their way, what is it Eric Holder had? Eric Holder said, when they go low, we go lower. We kick them and choke them and beat them. Barack Hussein Obama, if they bring a knife to the fight, we bring a gun. Nobody bothered to ask all the campaign trail, except for one person. I was actually there, and I did ask. I'm like, what did he mean by that? What did he mean? They would never answer that question. Well, now we know. I mean, they really do want to take it to all of you conservatives out there. So anyway, a lot of people very concerned. Oh, Karl Rove. You know, rarely do I agree with old Karl and his whiteboard, but he's got a good point here about. Abdul El-Sayed and the people that he associates with. Cut 19, please.
But how did he close his campaign? It's very insightful. He spent it the day campaigning with Hassan Piker, who said America deserved 9/11. If you're worried about Medicare fraud, you ought to kill Senator Rick Scott, a former health care executive. He said the Hamas attack on Israel and October 7th attack was Israel's fault, and the use of rape by Hamas didn't, quote, didn't change the dynamic for him. And he then mocks, he has mocked Congressman, Republican Congressman Dan Crenshaw of Texas, a decorated war hero who lost his eye in a firefight in Afghan. He mocked him by praising the guy who took his eye and tried to kill him. I mean, this is how El Saeed, how left-wing and out-of-touch El Saeed is with sort of working-class, blue-collar, middle America Michiganders, in my opinion, why this is going to be an excellent shot for the Republican pickup if El Saeed wins the nomination tonight.
Well, he did win the nomination last night, and now the Republicans in Michigan and even the Democrats in Michigan are going to have to make a pretty significant choice here. And one of the things that we've been seeing around the country is a depressed Republican turnout. That cannot happen. You folks in Michigan are going to have to step up to the plate here, and you're going to have to put a stop to this nonsense. But again, it looks as though a radical Muslim who pals around with jihadists could be going to the U.S. Senate. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. You know, this is all very fascinating to watch unfold. And one of the reasons, I want to play this audio. This is Abdul talking about America being a racist nation. Cut 14, please.
Founded on the removal of a whole people. Founded on the idea that we could compromise on whether or not people as a function of the color of their skin could be enslaved by other people. Founded under the idea that all people are created equal, all men, but that only meant certain men. And
now, yep, there you go. All right. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, going to take a quick break here. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Half a century later, Watergate still shapes how Americans view power, scandal, and trust. This weekend, the America 250 film series presents Watergate Secrets and Betrayals. Revisit the investigation through archival footage, interviews, and new arguments about what happened. Watch Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Salem News Channel.
All right, Democrats, man, they got sucker punched by the Democratic Socialist in Michigan, and this is happening all over the country, folks, and we are now in a situation. I want you to just think about this because, you know, they always say, well, you know, there's, you know, outside of talk radio, there's really not that much of a concern about socialists taking over America. You know, it's just a lot of hyperbole to get people riled up. But it's really not, ladies and gentlemen. We are looking now at one of the two major political parties being overrun, being taken over by these Democratic Socialists, the AOCs of the world. And this is why you've got people like James Carville. I'm mad as hell about this. That's why you have people like James Carville so riled up. And I mean, he's threatening to leave the Democrat Party if the Democratic Socialists completely take over. But if they do, they're signaling to you every single thing they will do. And I thought Shannon Bream over at Fox News Channel did a terrific job over the weekend on the Sunday shows, really explaining what it would mean if the Democratic Socialist ever gained full control. And we'll play some of that audio a little bit later. But this is a pretty serious situation for the entire nation, and you need to pay very close attention to this. You've got to get out, and you've got to vote. And there are a lot of reasons why the vote is depressed across America on the Republican side, and I get it. But we've got to get out there, and we've got to stop these Democratic Socialists. Let's go to the phone lines here, 901-260-5926, Anthony in Alabama. Anthony, what's on your mind today?
Thank you, Mr. Storms, for taking my call. And I was following a little of that election in Michigan, and it's El Sayed or Al Sayed. and Haley Stevens. And I had read some comments in some articles that a lot that was an open primary, and a lot of Republicans came out and they actually voted for El Sayed because they said Mike Rogers would have a much better chance of beating him than he would the more moderate Democrat, because more than likely some of the Democrats won't show up to even vote maybe for that El Sayed. But the major issue here is, how are these people who hate the country, they profess to destroy it, they go counter to the Constitution, able to even run for these offices? How are they going to put their hand on a Bible, or in their case, maybe the Quran, raise their right hand and say they're going to defend the Constitution of the United States and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic? I just don't get it. It's like it's a come-one-come-all thing here.
Well,
can you straighten me out with that?
I will do my best, Anthony.
Okay.
Look, I think ultimately here, Anthony, the challenge is this is not a religion we're talking about here when we're talking about Islam. This is a political ideology, and they are in the throes of taking over the Democrat Party right now. That is a very dangerous thing. These people have absolutely no allegiance to the United States of America. I'll tell you, there's growing talk and growing concern about the number of foreign-born judges that are being appointed by the Democrats. And it does make you wonder if we need to really revisit who is allowed to hold a public office, you know, when it comes to people that are foreign nationals. That's where a lot of this is coming from. So the question is, you know, they're bringing their value system to the United States of America. And instead of assimilating and embracing American culture, they're wanting us to bow down and worship their culture. That's not how it's supposed to work, Anthony.
Right. And you know what? You don't really hear a peep out of the Republicans about it. Where are they? It's like, what are they? They're counting their money.
Oh, well, yes. Look, let me explain. I was on Fox. I was on Newsmax yesterday, and I was explaining all of this on Newsmax that the Republican Party is ready to take back control from Trump. So Trump is pretty much going to be a lame duck president moving forward, and especially after the midterm elections. So yeah, so they're you're right. They are counting their money, and they got a lot of it. But we've got to make sure the only way to stop this, because 2028 is going to get very ugly, I'm afraid, for Republicans. That's why we've got to stop it now while we still have a chance. Anthony, thank you for calling in. Let's go to Memphis. Felicia joining us. Hi, Felicia. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for asking.
Okay. Why do you think that the Democratic Socialists are winning?
Well, I think, when you look at the people that are coming out and voting, Felicia, I think there are a lot of young people, and by young people, I mean millennials and Gen Z, more so millennials. These are people that have been educated in public schools for the past, I guess, decade at least, two decades, where they've been taught that the American way of life is wrong, that America is to blame for the world's problems, and that in many instances, socialism is better than the capitalism here in America.
Do you understand? What do you think is causing that? So you think it's just they're taught in school that socialism is better?
I think that's a lot of it, Felicia, and I think that, you know, moms and dads, in many cases, because I don't think it's coming from the home. I mean, Felicia, in your circle of friends, are people talking about socialism around the dinner table to the kids?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, me neither. That's not happening, you know, in my circle either. So I believe that this is a case of mom and dad not really paying attention to what they're teaching their kids in the public school. And I think by and large, the public schools in America are responsible for this massive radical change in thinking.
Okay. You don't think it has to do more with people using words like communism, socialism, fascism, and not knowing what any of those words mean, and people just randomly throwing them out and attaching them to anybody that disagrees with them politically?
What do you mean by that? Give me an example of what you're referring to.
I mean, when you hear political discourse, people use words flippantly. So, like, fascism, racism, communism, people use those words interchangeably to label people they disagree with. And so words lose power. Like, so if people use racism all the time, that word has lost its power. It doesn't mean anything to anyone anymore because it's used so flippantly. And so you don't think that that's possibly the same thing with socialism?
Yeah,
that
you know,
it's lost its power because it's used all of the time and people have become like it means nothing. It's just a nothing word now.
Felicia, I think, no, I see where you're going with this, and I don't disagree with what you're with what you're saying here. And I think that is a fair assessment, that people do not know the differences or the distinctions. I think when you're talking about socialism and communism, they are very, very connected and related. I mean, there are differences. Both are very bad. And, you know, but again, I think if you ask the average person out on the street, what's the difference, to your point, yeah, I'm not sure they would be able to tell you, and that is something that is troubling, and I think that's where, again, you have to go back and you have to teach the history about how many people have been slaughtered just in the 20th century by those ideologies. So I think that's a fair point. Yeah, yeah, I agree.
If we're using slaughtering based on, you're talking about political systems, of people slaughtering. People have been killed up under capitalism as well. So if we're using that...
No, how so? How so? What do you mean by that?
Okay, so we can use building, like, say, an electrical plant in a poor neighborhood where the people... You don't build factories and things that kill people in... higher.
Where's your proof? Where's your proof or evidence of that?
Oh, I'm telling. Can you name a whole bunch of AI models or factories or coal dumping plants in Germantown or say Beverly Hills?
But again, where is your proof? Where is your proof that you're saying that capitalism is out there killing people? I will tell you.
You're saying that socialism is killing
people. Yes, ma'am, I am. 100 million people. 100 million people slaughtered in the name of communism in the 20th century, Felicia. Absolutely. And that's all very well documented. 100 million people.
Ask me for documentation. So what's yours?
Well, you can go, but you can read a history book.
I mean, I can read a history book, and you could, too. So I'm asking you, you made the claim that 100 million people...
Read the Black Book. Read the Black Book of Communism. You got to educate yourself, Felicia. I'm asking you, where is your evidence? If you read any history book, it will tell you exactly how many people have been killed by the communist. I'm asking you, you say that capitalism is killing people. How is where is your evidence of that?
Socioeconomic political system.
Where's your information? Where's your proof?
Are you serious?
I am serious. I'm asking you, where is your proof?
Sure. Hold on. Give me 1 second.
No, we're not going to, we don't have time. We're coming up on a break here, but we've been chatting for almost 6 minutes now, and you didn't get to your point, Felicia. You got to get right to your point on this program. A good try though. And Felicia, give us a call back. But again, you have to come armed with the facts here. When you look at China and go back through your history books, 55 million people were killed by the Chinese communist. Under Lenin and Stalin, as many as 20 million people killed. It is a very dangerous and very deadly political ideology, ladies and gentlemen. And let me say something. We're not teaching that in our public schools. We need to be teaching it in our public schools. But you've got people like Felicia here, and she thinks that Elon Musk is like the bad guy because they want to build these data centers and other things. And they're alleging that that's what's killing people. I'm asking for the numbers and the proof. Where is it? All right. Got to take a break. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
For nearly 3,000 years, Homer's The Odyssey has shaped Western imagination. It tells the story of Odysseus as he faces monsters, shipwrecks, false comforts, and impossible choices on his long journey home. As one of the foundational works of Western literature, Homer's epic is more than a mythology. It explores permanent questions about courage, duty, loyalty, family, leadership, temptation, and the search for home. In one of the epic's defining moments, Odysseus rejects the offer of immortality from the goddess Calypso, choosing instead the long and difficult journey home. His decision reveals one of the central themes of the Odyssey, that a life of duty, family, and home is greater than a life devoted to comfort or glory. Achilles chose glory. Odysseus chose home. That's why Hillsdale College has released its newest free online course, The Odyssey. Taught by Professor Benedict Whalen, the course reveals why Homer's masterpiece remains one of the greatest works of Western literature. Find this free course at charlieforhillsdale.com. That's charlieforhillsdale.com. Read the classics. Study the West. The Odyssey from Hillsdale College. Go to charlieforhillsdale.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Very happy to have you with us today. Very disturbing thing the president announced yesterday. He was in the Oval Office taking some questions from reporters, and we had been told to prepare for a massive attack on Iran that would have been probably as bad as something that would have happened in World War II. That did not happen. The president said the Iranians got wind of it, and they asked to come back to the negotiating table, and the president agreed, which led me to write the following message on X, that the on again, off again, Iran war policy is now off again. Now we get word that the president says that somebody in the White House or the Pentagon leaked the information about the Iranian strikes to the enemy. And the president's very upset about this, says the leakers ought to be put in jail, and we need to find out who they are and get to the bottom of all of this. Well, absolutely. He said in this case, leakers helped because they said the severity of the attack, and Iran knew it, they knew what was coming. Well, I want to bring into the conversation a man who can help us sort through all of this. He's our good buddy. We call him the Dragon, but he is retired Brigadier General John Tykert. John, good to have you with us today.
Todd, as always, thanks again for having me.
So, look, I've got a lot of questions here about this. First of all, this leak. What do you make of this leak coming out of the administration?
Todd, it is shameful if it is true that operational security is the key not only for the United States to achieve our operational strategic objectives, but to keep our military members safe. And if there is someone that is leaking information that is putting Americans at risk, then we need to very quickly get to the bottom of it and very quickly throw the book at that individual or individuals.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was doing some research last night on the Espionage Act, and there are some pretty serious penalties for doing something like this, including you could wind up getting the death penalty here in some cases, depending on the nature of the leak and how that information was used. And I'm just wondering, have we just been so lax in all of this that people, you know, in the military think they can leak this information, or somebody in the administration can just leak it without any without any repercussions?
Well, Todd, I don't know what the root cause of this is, but I do want to emphasize that at least from our military training, we are very well indoctrinated into the importance of not sharing that type of information, because it means our brothers and sisters to the right or the left of us could be killed or put at risk as a result. I don't know if this is a staffer, but I really hope this is a wake-up call for anyone in the inner circle of an administration that would know the details of something like this, that this is serious business. Like you said, the ultimate penalties could be the ultimate penalty. And I really hope that we tighten up our security processes so nothing like this ever happens again.
General, I meant to ask you this last time we had you on. There was some sort of an attack on one of the military bases. I believe it was in Jordan, and there was video of this that was actually posted on social media by members of the military who were there. And I'm just wondering, do you guys have rules and regulations, especially in a time of war, about whether or not, you know, soldiers, airmen should be using cell phones and other devices, you know, and they might, unknowingly share very important information with the enemy?
Todd, there are not only rules and regulations, but also regular communication. So things like that don't happen. And, you know, it's as simple as making sure that the location identification items on your phones are turned off, because even just the location of an individual soldier or sailor can give away the well-being of all of those who are around them. And then certainly after a strike, there should be no sort of battle damage assessment done by individuals that are posted or shared with the world, because that type of information is extremely sensitive, and just tipping off an adversary about how well a strike did can give them the reinforcing mechanism that can make the next one even worse.
What do you make of what's going on in Iran right now? I think the American people are confused. And they're very frustrated. We had over 1,000 comments on a post we did on social media, and 99.9% of them, all Trump supporters, and every single one of them is just really frustrated with whatever we're doing with Iran right now.
Todd, they have the right to be frustrated, because our credibility is sinking fast. Whenever the president makes strong threats and then for some reason backs down from those threats, especially because we've seen, like you said, at least 5 cycles of that, it diminishes our credibility. But Todd, I think the president's instincts have been right here, that those large-scale strategic strikes against carefully mapped targets like power plants and energy sites would strangle and neuter the regime. And I wish that he would follow through on those threats. And I get a sense that someone in his administration is prompting him to take an off-ramp, but I don't think that we can take any more off-ramps. I think we have to follow through. And I do think that actually enacting some of those threats would change the calculus and strike at the heart of the regime and help us far better achieve our strategic objectives than trusting that the Iranians are going to try to make a good deal on our behalf.
Yeah, we got a call from a listener, I think it was last week, and they were like, well, you know, it's a war crime to hit power plants and bridges. No, this is war. And I'm wondering, General, when you guys, you know, are out there blowing these things up or sending in the jets to blow up the power plants and the bridges, there is a strategic reason for doing things like that.
Todd, there is. And I just want to make very clear that Captain Tykert, early on in my career, attacked targets like bridges and railways and power plants and energy sites in the former Yugoslavia under President Bill Clinton. If targets are mapped to dual use, which means there is a military affiliation to a target, then that is a valid target and often a very effective target. And I hate the hand-wringing about war crimes now, when back in 1999, no one seemed to be bothered with the idea of striking those same kind of targets.
It does seem, I mean, coming from the military standpoint here, it must be frustrating for the Pentagon and the military leaders. They're trying to get this done. Meanwhile, it seems, and I'm just going to assume here, that the people that are pushing back and saying, no, we need to ease up, would in fact be the politicos, the suits in the White House, and not necessarily the folks in uniform.
Well, Todd, I agree with you. I know that at least the military members and the leaders are giving best military advice and recommendations to the president. And then whatever decision-making process is going on around him is likely causing what are recommendations to continue strikes and regain the initiative and changing it into something that now the multiple cycles have caused us to lose the initiative, which means Iran is leading and shaping the situation, and we are now following and being shaped, and that is not the position we need to be in to achieve our strategic objectives.
I know the president. This is just, it seems to be out of his character, the way this has been handled. And I'm wondering, what do you make of that? And you mentioned a concern about, I am concerned about legacy here, because we don't need to be dragged into a war that goes on for, you know, another 6 or 7 months.
Todd, we were at the height of our influence and strength vis-a-vis Iran at the end of active combat operations at the beginning of April. And now our strength and our pressure and our influence has been waning. And I don't mind way back then giving the Iranians one chance to make a good deal. But now this competitive, repetitive cycle is causing our strength to diminish. And, you know, the rest of the world is watching. And that includes Xi and Putin and others. And we need to regain deterrence. We need to regain compellence. And I strongly believe, especially attacking Karg Island and strangling and neutering every source of resourcing for the regime, would be the most effective strategic play here. I wish we would have done it back in April, but we need to stop giving Iran more chances, because they're going to continue to keep the initiative and our credibility is diminishing as a result.
So, General, you're in the Situation Room. What advice do you give the president? What do you do now?
Todd, the Iranian regime, and I know this firsthand, is strengthened and enticed by our perceived weakness and capitulation and appeasement. Mr. President, strike the oil infrastructure at Karg Island. 90% of the resources of the regime would be destroyed in one night of strikes against Karg. And whether the regime is flipped or not, they wouldn't have the resources to enact their malign intent, and you must immediately attack Karg Island and destroy the resourcing of the regime to regain the initiative.
All right, good stuff. General, how have things been going out there? I see you all over the place, and of course you started with our little show here, and now you're like a rock star on Fox News.
Well, you know, Todd, I say yes every time someone from your office reaches out to me, because I know who my friends are, and I just deeply appreciate the fact that you have been so kind to me over these years, and I look forward. I know we have an engagement coming up in Lancaster in September, and I look forward to some fellowship over some root beer at that event.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and the root beer is mighty good. The Spiritual Leadership Conference, that's coming up September 27th through the 30th at Lancaster Baptist Church and West Coast Baptist College, a beautiful, beautiful campus. And we would love for you guys to come out and hang out with us. I understand the numbers are off the charts this year, only because I think, General, and don't tell Dr. Chappell this, you and I are on the platform. So I think.
Well, I think it might help a little bit, but you know, it is their 40th anniversary as
yes.
a church. I accepted Christ as my Savior through that ministry in 2004, and I love going back there. I get filled up with the Spirit and service to the Lord, and I know you do too.
It's a great blessing, and we just love Dr. Chappell and the great people there at Lancaster. And I think that's for me. I just love the fellowship. You're going to get some incredible teaching. You're going to be challenged. You're going to step out of your comfort zone. But for me, I love the fellowship of all of those great brothers and sisters in the Lord. And by the way, are you going to be able to get up back up to the old stomping grounds over at Edwards?
I think I'm going to go up there and speak to a portion of F-22 test pilots while I'm there. And I don't know, are you going to have a chance to film your show from Lancaster Baptist? And if so, please put me on the invite list.
Yeah, we're going to work through the details on that, but that is the game plan, and we'll definitely do that. So, all right, General, good hearing from you again. Our good friend, General John Tykert, go to his website. He's written a number of wonderful books, JohnTykert.com. That's T-E-I-C-H-E-R-T, JohnTykert.com, one of our great American heroes and patriots and a fellow brother in the Lord. All right, we've got to take a quick break here. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This segment of the Todd Starnes Show brought to you by our friends at Newsmax. It's true, millions of Americans agree with the president, and they're switching to Newsmax. They're watching great shows with Greta, Carl Higbee, Rob Schmidt, Finnerty, and more. And if you're tired of big media, start watching Newsmax. It is free to start. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com for immediate access. You're going to get all of the president's most important events live. You're going to be able to watch some great documentaries as well. NewsmaxPlus.com. That's NewsmaxPlus.com.
Grainger knows when you're a procurement manager for an office park, you're not managing one building. You're managing all of them. And to stay ahead, you need to see through walls and around corners.
Lights about to fail, filters ready to clog, HVAC on its last leg? If you wait until something breaks, you're already behind. Count on Grainger. For quality products, easy reordering, and 24/7 support. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, very interesting comments coming from General Tykert, a great, great military leader. And I think he's just as concerned as a lot of you are about what is going on right now inside the White House, as clearly there is massive disagreement on what to do about Iran. You know, the question is, does this impact the midterm elections? Well, if gas prices are staying high, and if, for example, if grocery prices are high, well, yeah, you're gonna have some problems, big time problems. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. So there is a big controversy about burritos. And now the Vice President of the United States is weighing in on this, and it involves the Turning Point USA. And there's been a lot of talk about affordability, and TPUSA really focusing in on this, and they're taking the side of the college kids and young Americans who say the price of goods is just too high. So anyway, Andrew Colvett, who is the TPUSA spokesman, produces what they're still calling the Charlie Kirk Show. He says, one of our TPUSA college students gave me his take on affordability. The student said, quote, a burrito should not cost $20. And Colvett said a lot of this is a hangover from COVID and the Biden era inflation, but the lived experience is the same. It just feels like basic things cost too much. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we don't operate on feelings on this program. My question to you is, are prices high or are they not? Now, Matt Walsh is weighing in on this. He said grocery prices are insane. They're still rising. Addressing this problem should be the number one priority of every elected leader. End the stupid foreign wars and focus on this issue. It's one of the main reasons socialists are gaining power. Now, ladies and gentlemen, do you agree or disagree with that assessment? One person said, well, stop buying burritos at the restaurant and start learning to cook at home. Learn how to budget. One person saying, I'm not saying things are out of whack and there have not been crazy inflation, but if you can't afford to eat out, and I spent years in this position, don't eat out. Cook. Eat in. Sometimes you just need to have a dinner of mashed potatoes or a PB&J sandwich or two. Try a can of tuna on some bread. Oh, I love tuna fish. You got to have the celery, though, for the crunch. It's very tasty. Duke's mayonnaise. That's good eating. You got to toast the bread, though. Got to toast the bread. Anyway, I digress. This person goes on to say there are ways to save money and survive until you can afford it. Burritos are out, and Starbucks are luxuries for many. Just avoid them. So anyway, now the vice, Mark Thiessen's weighing in on this. The vice president is weighing in on this. Mark Thiessen says, cry me a river. The burritos in the college cafeteria are included in your meal plan. And the vice president says, I'm surprised to hear Mark say this. If you've ever met him in person, it's quite obvious the man has never missed a burrito. What is Mark Thiessen fat or something? Is that what J.D. Vance is trying to say? Pardon me, but the vice president doesn't have much room. The rumor was that he was forced to lose weight before he could join the ticket. So that's I'm not saying anything. I'm just again. Here's Shapiro weighing in. I hear that young people are upset about $20 burritos. By the way, who's paying $20 for a burrito? Is that how much a burrito cost?
Depends on where you go.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Taco Bell's burritos aren't $20 themselves. But if you get the sides, then yeah, you're going to deal with some $20.
Really? A $20 burrito? Anyway, Shapiro says if you're paying $20 for a burrito and you're not independently wealthy, you're doing life wrong. We're going to price this out. Find out how much it would cost to actually make a burrito at home. All right, 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Burrito Gate, when we return.
Grainger knows when you're a procurement manager for an office park, you're not managing one building. You're managing all of them. And to stay ahead, you need to see through walls and around corners. Lights about to fail, filters ready to clog, HVAC on its last leg. If you wait until something breaks, you're already behind. Count on Grainger for quality products, easy reordering, and 24/7 support. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us, that's right, I love this American ride.
All right, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to jump right in to Burrito Gate. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Great to have you with us today. So, look, there's a big raging controversy among conservative Gen Zers started by Matt Walsh and Turning Point USA. A Turning Point USA student complaining about the price of a burrito, which the student said was $20 and was unaffordable, and TPUSA weighing in and saying, you know, we've got to do something about all of this. And Matt Walsh is out there saying we need to be focused more on dropping prices in America as opposed to doing the foreign wars. And a lot of folks are offering their thoughts here. One of President Trump's advisors, Alex Brusewich, he is the CEO of X Strategies, LLC. He says socialist candidates are performing well at the moment because many Americans feel deeply discouraged. People who believe they did everything right, got good grades, worked hard, followed the rules, still can't seem to get ahead. Socialism would only make their problems worse, yet its promises sound appealing to those in this situation. President Trump often seems to be the only Republican who recognizes this frustration and speaks directly to these Americans. Republican candidates running against DSA members need a clear message and real solutions for these voters. Simply dismissing those who are cozying up to socialist candidates as entitled or stupid will backfire. So as much as this is about burritos, it's really about communism, I mean, at the end of the day. And a lot of people are afraid that if enough Gen Zers can't afford a burrito combo, then we might turn into a socialist nation. I mean, that's the concern here. Very odd story. But now everybody's wanting to get their 2 cents worth in on this. Ben Shapiro says that I hear young people are upset about $20 burritos. Okay, young people, a burrito does not cost $20. If you're paying $20 for a burrito, you're not independently wealthy. You're doing life wrong. Well, may I just suggest that if you're going to Starbucks every day, you may be doing life wrong as well. Put my 2 cents worth in. First of all, who's paying $20 for a burrito? So, Dylan, we went down. I decided to do the price comparison. You know, they do that a lot on the Price is Right.
Yes.
And so I decided to look and see exactly what it is that people are paying for when it comes to burritos. The most expensive burrito, and I limited this to the casual fast food, okay, right? So I don't think I included Chipotle. Well, Chipotle is in the list. So the priciest is the Moe's Southwest Grill Home Wrecker Chicken Burrito. That's $10.99.
That makes a lot of sense. Moe's likes to do that.
The next one is Qdoba.
Okay.
$10.99.
Do we have a Qdoba?
I don't think we have a Qdoba. They're pretty good, actually, though. The next is Chipotle, their chicken burrito, $10.75. Then Del Taco, their epic burrito, $6.99. Taco Bell, the burrito supreme. Oh, I love the burrito supreme. Mm. You got the. I don't like the beans. I just get a beef, but I haven't put in the black olives. Love the black olives.
That one I have to disagree with vehemently.
Really?
Yeah. Black olives in a burrito? Olives in general.
With a little sour cream and all that. The Taco Bell Beefy Melt Burrito, $3. And the Taco Bell Cheesy Bean and Rice Burrito, $2.49.
So I think the solution is just to go to Taco Bell. It sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it's the least expensive option. So, but again, I mean, where are these kids getting the $20 burrito? That's what I'm trying to figure out. What's going on here?
Definitely not at any of these fast food places.
What are they going to, Ruth's Chris? They got a burrito on the menu?
Steak burrito.
So, but there's an even cheaper option. And hear me on this. There's a section in the supermarket called the frozen food aisle. And they have the frozen burritos, right? So do you know that you can get the Walmart, for example, the Walmart Great Value Burritos. You're going to get an 8-pack. So if you're really hungry, you're going to get to be able to get 8 burritos for $3.82. That's 48 cents a burrito.
It's not bad.
That's not bad at all. Here we go. El Monterey. So if you want the brand name, El Monterey Family Pack, you're going to get 8 burritos, and it's only going to set you back 70 cents a burrito. Slap a little salsa on it and get yourself some sour cream. You got a great meal.
You wouldn't even tell a difference.
No. And then there's Amy's Kitchen. Is that the vegan chick?
It sounds vegan.
Oh, yeah. I was getting some chili or something. I was looking for some chili, and I thought, this is Amy. And it was like vegetarian chili. I'm like, what is that? What is it?
It's a crime.
And the hot dog would not accept it.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Do not put this on me. That's what the hot dog said. Red's burritos, you're going to be able to get, they're a little bit more pricey, $1.71 a piece, but apparently they're pretty good burritos.
That's good quality.
It is, for a frozen burrito. But again, I think the issue here is, for example, are you a big Starbucks guy?
I'm not a big Starbucks guy, but I do know the prices of the coffees.
It's a lot of money.
It's at least $5 for a grande.
A lot of money. Do you realize... And again, this is just the culture, but if you actually brewed that coffee at home, and I'm not talking about the Keurig, but if you just brewed it at home, you're going to be saving almost, in some cases, depending on what your order is, but if you're like a Frappuccino and you decide you're just going to do all that at home, you're going to save $2,300 a year just on coffee. So I'm wondering with these young people, I understand. I mean, it's, a lot of the people weighing in here are multimillionaires or people that are very well off. And that is unfair because if you're a young person, you're not earning as much as those people, and the dollar has to stretch. But here's the problem with young people. You can't afford to go to Starbucks. You can't afford to go out. And do you realize that this generation, Gen Z, eats out more than any other generation? From the boomers, Gen Xers, Gen Z actually eats out more. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe you got to start cooking at home. And, again, there are some days. I remember when I was a kid growing up, wash day was Monday. Mom did the laundry on Monday. And that was red beans and rice day. So mom put on a big old pot of red beans, and we had the red beans and rice. And if it was like a good economy, we got some andouille sausage in the red beans and rice. But again, these are very simple meals, and you just wonder, okay, yes, the economy may be tough, but is it possible that Gen Z may be living beyond its means just a smidge? 901-260-5926. Charles, North Carolina, wants to weigh in on the burritos. All right, Charles, what you got for us?
Well, Chad, I don't normally eat burritos, but I will say that around here where I live, I've noticed, and I made a comment about this past weekend, but you go out to a restaurant and the starting price for a hamburger, $18.
Yeah.
I left the grocery store the other day. I got two bags and groceries, and I don't eat high on the hog. I mean, just mainly some breakfast food and stuff. Two bags, $84. So I agree with you that a lot of young people are living way beyond their means, but we can't dismiss what they're saying because they're struggling. Most young people I know cannot afford a down payment on a house. They can't afford a house payment. They can't hardly afford a car payment, health insurance. And like you said, they've done a lot of things right, but yet they feel like that they're being left out of this economy. So when somebody like a Hassan Piker or El Sayed in Michigan and these socialists come, you know, that message, free stuff, is resonating with them, even though all the spending, all the inflation that was started under Joe Biden, that's what caused all of this. Today, I heard a story. The Dallas Federal Reserve has said that illegal aliens are responsible for 30% of the increase in housing costs. So I think if we want to try to win the midterms and win in 2028, it's not enough just to call people, you know, demagogue them for call being socialist communists, but Republicans have to offer solutions, which they're not. We're just criticizing, but we're not saying what we're going to do. I mean, that's why we don't need to let up off the gas of mass deportations to bring down housing costs. How about a bill to repeal Obamacare, which is making healthcare prices go up and making healthcare unaffordable? How about saying that we're going to go back to pre-COVID spending levels and quit spending $1 trillion, going in debt $1 trillion every 90 days, which exacerbates inflation? These are things I think where Republicans are dropping the ball. And we need to explain to people why they're in the predicament they are economically, and then what our solution is going to be.
You know, it's interesting when you look at the numbers, Charles, and I'm with you on that, and we're very careful here not to criticize Gen Z because they are being impacted more so than anybody else. And when you look at the housing market, for example, it's really appalling that the kids can't afford to buy homes. You look at home ownership among Gen Z, it's what, around 27%. Millennials, only around 55%. I mean, a little over a half of millennials actually own a home. And many of these kids have done every single thing that has been asked of them, and everything is still out of reach. And that is the concern. That would be the concern I have when you've got these young, attractive, you know, socialist out there saying that they feel their pain and they've got a solution to it. Because right now, I guess if you asked a lot of these kids, they would say, well, the current form of government we have is not working for them.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. I mean, in a case in point, a good friend of mine's son just graduated last year with an engineering degree, got his first job making $75,000 a year, which was a lot more than mine. The average price of a house is over $400,000. If he tries to put 10% down, he's got to come up with $40,000. His monthly house payment on that $75,000 a year salary, God, represents almost 40% of his monthly income. When I bought my first house, my house payment was around 15%. So between credit card debt, housing, car payments, I don't know how these young people are making it. I really don't. And that's where they're trying to now blame capitalism for it. And capitalism is not the problem. The problem is our government, with all its spending, all its overregulation, all its indoctrination of these kids, and not teaching them how money works, how to save, how to invest, that's put them in this predicament. And that's what I'm saying. Republicans have got to do something to shift gears to give these people an alternative, well, and something to vote for and not against.
Yeah. Charles, appreciate the call, and thank you for that. No, it's true. Prices are going up. Dylan, I was at, we went to the Chick-fil-A yesterday, treated everybody to lunch. We may as well have gone to Ruth's Chris.
Yeah, I understand.
It's crazy. Are you ready for this? The price of just a regular Chick-fil-A sandwich, right? Not even an extra pickle, not even the Chick-fil-A sauce. It's gone up 40% from 2019. They were $3.75, now $5.75. Those the nuggets and the grilled nuggets are off the charts. I know they're healthy for you, but good Lord.
Oh yeah, the healthier, the more expensive.
I was and I went to and actually, as soon as I heard the price, I just went right on by one of my favorite barbecue joints. I'm not going to name it. They do Texas brisket, and it was like a one meat platter with two sides. It was like $35.
For one person?
For one person.
Yikes.
One person. a one meat, two sides, $35. I'm like, I'm good. I'm good. Let's go to David, Memphis, Tennessee, listening to us on KWAM. Hi, David. What's up?
Hey, Todd, I just want to clarify something you said and then give you a little comment about something. First of all, we'll talk about the, what you mentioned first, the Taco Bell. Now that item you're talking about, $2, is the new dollar menu, basically. It was not a dollar, but it's so tiny and small for a grown man. It's like one, it's like an hors d'oeuvre, you know, it's nothing. And so now, you know, you go to any fast food restaurant for a grown man, you're not going, I don't care if it's McDonald's. We're not talking about buying one McDouble. If you want a decent meal, you're going to spend $15 to $20 for one person off the top. And then the sandwich you said at Chick-fil-A, I go there all the time, and with tax, it's not no $5.75. Spicy chicken deluxe sandwich is like $7 and some change by itself, $9-something plus tax for the combo. And so I was just clarifying that. But anyhow, the thing is, people can't make it these days. I mean, I'm 55, and I went to the military when I was 19. Prior to that, I had a minimum wage job, and basically paid $3.35 an hour back then. I was able to afford an apartment. I had all the furnishings from Radio Shack to wherever. And that's bussing tables. Okay. Now you can make $20 something an hour. They don't give them, usually give them about 38 hours, 35 hours. You might get 40 if you're lucky. And then they don't, you know, get no benefits. And so you can't even afford an apartment, let alone the furnishings with $20 an hour anymore. So, no, you're going to spend, one person is going to be, anywhere you go, fast food, it's going to be 15 plus a person. You go to a sit-down restaurant, you can only imagine. And those burritos you're talking about, I've had them before at the grocery store. They're nasty in a way. I mean, they're edible if you're on a budget, but they're nasty. They're like frozen, and it's just, they're bad. But there's no way a grown man, and you're a big guy, you know, I'm just saying, you know, and there's no way you're going to eat. If I go to McDonald's, I'm going to have at least two McDoubles, some fries, you know, and so forth. Even if I get the McDouble one and not even the combo, you know, there's $12, $13, $14 right there.
It's a, look, it's a lot of money. And so my whole point of that is, David, and I haven't had the frozen burritos. I'm not a big burrito guy these days. But I will say this, and David, thanks for the call. We got a skedaddle. Look, yeah, can you cut back and just, you know, eat at home? I remember when I was a kid, we just did not eat out a lot. I mean, it was a very, very special occasion, you know, for us to go and eat out. Again, what is the solution here? And what do you tell these young people, folks? What do you tell them? 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, let's go right to the phone lines. Jess in Houston, listening to us on Patriot Talk 920. All right, Jess, what's on your mind?
Your last two or three callers brought a tear to my eye. Whatever happened to the brown paper bag where you get up before you go to work and you throw a slab of ham and cheese between two pieces of bread, put it in a brown paper sack with an apple, and take it to work? Whatever happened to those people?
That's a great question, Jess. That brings back memories. And it wasn't like doubling up on the ham. You got one slice.
Yeah. I mean, everybody wants to complain. It's pretty obvious. If you're making $20 an hour, take a sack lunch 3 days a week and take that money and put it in a savings account. And then when you're 40 or 50 years old, you'll have something. But everybody wants immediate gratification. You don't get out of college and go buy a $400,000 house and pay $5,000 a month. You don't do that.
No, you buy a starter home, and maybe it's in not a great neighborhood, but it's a starting point. And I think that may be one of the issues, is you can't start at the country club. You got to, you know, start in maybe a rougher part of town, maybe. I don't know. It's Jess, thank you for the call. Got to take a break here. 901-260-5926. Your calls on Burrito Gate coming up. You know, when you look back on our generation, all of us Gen Xers, you know, we were starting out and the medium price, the medium salary was what, between $38,000 and $42,000 a year. Now, for Gen Z, the starting out salary, 45, and these are inflation adjusted, 45,000 to 55,000 starting out. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The typical home price for those of us in the Gen X world, where you can buy a starter home from like $80,000 to $170,000 for, you know, on the nicer side. Gen Z, $350,000 for this, you know, to $430,000 for the starter homes. So that's, you know, you're looking at certainly costs have gone up. Let's go to Lacey in the Woodlands, Texas, listening to us on Patriot Talk 920. Hi, Lacey. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of the callers saying that the younger people do buy, you know, go out and eat too much. But I'm in the grocery store every day, and I watch these grocery prices. Like the man said, take your lunch. Yes, it's a cheaper alternative, but the prices in the grocery store are absolutely outrageous. I can watch from today, it can go up 20, 50 cents overnight.
Really?
Yes. I'm in there every day. That's my lunch break. And I'm like, it's just ridiculous how much the stuff is. So a lunch that used to cost us a dollar to take brown bag is $3 or $4 right now. It is crazy. And it is still cheaper than eating out. I totally agree with that. But I mean, the prices are like, even the cheapest lunch meat is $3, $4 a package.
That's interesting. So you've seen the prices go up dramatically.
Oh, yes. And you can jump one day, like I said, 30 to 50 cents in one day over something. Yes, I see it all the time. I'm a super, super savvy shopper. And I always, my motto is if it's not on sale and we don't have a coupon, then we don't need it.
Wow. I just, so, you know, I do I do the coupons. You know, I have found myself doing coupons. And again, it's one thing if you're, you know, a multi-bazillionaire, you're not going to care. You're not even going to look at the prices. But I think a lot of folks, you know, if you are living paycheck to paycheck, that is going to hurt you if those prices are going up in some cases, you know, twice in a week.
Sure, it does. And I, like you're saying, these younger people, they are all about the instant gratification. But it's true. The prices are way more expensive than like 20 years ago when I first started, you know, working that, oh, yeah, it was cheap enough to take your lunch and all that. But now, it's not like that.
Lacey, do you think it impacts people's voting? I mean, if you're still looking at super high prices at the grocery store.
I lost my train of thought. So if the prices don't come down, that's one reason people don't vote, because we feel like the same thing. Nothing's changed. Nothing's going to change. And we were even talking about it today, and I'm like, I don't think that we're never going to go back before pre-COVID prices. None of this, ever. They already know they have you, you know, you're paying this price. They're not going to drop it down enough to make a significant amount on anything. It was like my sister-in-law, she wanted to buy a new Expedition. And they have excellent credit, and they told them it was like 9% interest rate. And they go, but we have great credit. They said, it doesn't matter. We can get the 9%. So, no, there's no offers on it because we can already get it from people anyway. So they already know they got the American public, you know, like they said, there's no incentive because if people want that vehicle, they're going to pay the 9%.
Mm.
And so they went with another vehicle. A whole different brand and everything to get a better deal. And like I said, it wasn't about their credit or, you know, anything like that. They just said, nope, we're not offering any incentives. This is a vehicle people want, and they're willing to pay that kind of 9% interest rate, which is insane in my head.
Well, no, it is. It is absolutely insane. And I think you can say that this is a big combo platter of issues, and especially with younger and Gen Z voters are, you know, they're getting close to 30 years old in some cases. So you're looking at kids that are actually putting off, you know, starting their lives. You know, many of them still live at home, and it's because of this, as you said, the the affordability issues. There you go. Lacey, thanks for your insight. Let's go to Georgia. Stud Muffin is on the line, listening to us on WDUN. Hello, Stud Muffin.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
I'm calling and because I'm hearing stuff that's kind of making me a little angry. You can be poor, and it can build you and give you character as long as you understand that you can get out of it and work towards it. I have a lot of respect for somebody that's working and poor. He's not taking handouts. He's not crying the blues. He can't have this. He doesn't go out to eat 7 days a week. I have a lot of respect for a guy like that. And the key to it, to me, Todd, is you got to save. You got to buy. You don't buy on credit. You don't buy on debit or loans. You save the money however how long it takes. And then you go buy. I haven't bought a new car in probably 35 years. Everything I buy is used. I've never bought a new house. Everything I bought, I had to do my own homework and fix it and work on it. It can be done. But this whining and crying is just too much.
Yeah, well, I will say this, Stud Muffin. I have a lot of respect for the people who aren't poor, who have made it in life. I mean, I have great respect for those folks as well. I mean, I get what you're saying here. But I think the challenge for a lot of these folks is they don't want to be poor. You know, they don't want to have to live paycheck to paycheck. But sometimes that happens. I mean, that's been the way it's been since, you know, I guess Noah, back in the days of Noah. You know, you're always going to have people with more than what you've got. But to your point, again, if you are only making a certain amount of money, you've got to figure out, all right, how do I live my life based on this amount of money that I have? You know, what do I need to do to get by? In some cases, you may have to have a roommate. In some cases, like you said, you may not be able to buy a brand new car, which, by the way, a lot of folks do not recommend doing anyway, but get a used car. So it is about economizing to a certain point. But Stud Muffin, my concern is we've got a generation of kids that are becoming very disenfranchised. They've been taught in their schools that America is bad, that capitalism is wrong. You've got the rise of socialism. And I hear what you're saying, but I'm not sure that argument is going to be resonating with those kids.
Probably not, because they're being taught the wrong message. They're not being taught to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. They're saying that they want the easy life because if it's given to them, and they're believing it. It's garbage. It's absolute garbage.
Stud Muffin, good thoughts, good comment. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. All this over burritos, Dylan.
Hey. Burritos spark a lot of a conversation nowadays.
Well, it's true, among other things. There you go. So we'll see how it all plays out. I think there's an argument to be made on a lot of different sides on this one. So it would be very easy just to dismiss Gen Z and say, just suck it up and deal with it. But I don't think that's the right move here. I really don't. 901-260-5926. McKinney, Texas, can we talk about what happened there last night? You guys are really concerned about the rise of Islam in your community and the local Muslims wanting to put up a gigantic, ginormous mosque. Hundreds of people turned out at City Hall and said no more. Hundreds. The City Council meeting yesterday in McKinney, Texas, a suburb of Dallas, lasted over 5 hours. 5 hours. And at the end of the day, the McKinney City Council told all of the people gathered, screw you, and voted 7-0 to approve the massive new mosque complex anyway. So your opinion doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. I mean, it was quite remarkable to see the turnout there in McKinney, but the people there just don't, they're concerned. Now, the question is, do they have valid concerns? I do believe they have valid concerns. I want to play some audio here. This is Congressman Keith Self, and you got to respect the congressman. He actually showed up at the meeting and addressed the city council as a citizen and as the congressman. Cut 25.
Mayor and council, 1,400 years history of political Islam. You can't get away from it. I don't have time to talk about Syria, Egypt, Lebanon. I will talk about the 250,000, quarter of a million non-Muslim girls abducted off of the streets of UK, modern times, passed around the members of the rape gang, put back on the street. Look, rape is horrific. Gang rape is horrific. But this was a demonstration of the dominance over man-made law, over the laws of the UK. It's as simple as that. The sad part is that the police have arrested some of these girls for public drunkenness because they don't want to be known as racist or Islamophobic. That's the saddest part about it besides the rape. Look, I know you're in the accommodation phase, but the intimidation phase follows quickly. It's already happening in cities in Texas. Child marriage, honor killings. Don't tell me it can't happen here because it's already happened in Texas, where you kill a member of your own family because they dishonored the family. Beating your wife, polygamy, all condoned under Sharia, political Islam. Look, you and I are no matters of conscience. The freedom to choose our faith or not does not exist in political Islam. Ask any Muslim what the penalty is for leaving political Islam. It's death. I have any number of videos of imams in America, modern-day America, preaching sedition, open sedition, against the U.S. Constitution and the laws of this land. 1,400 years of history. You can't get away from it. This is your time, though. This is your moment of truth. This is your time for choosing. This is your time to choose to honor your oath that starts with the U.S. Constitution. There is no state cavalry coming to save you. This is your time. I yield back the balance of my time, and I'll say goodnight.
All right. Thank you, Congressman. It wasn't just in McKinney, Texas. Also in Mooresville, North Carolina, which I think is pretty close to our friends at WSIC. I think their signal covers Mooresville. Hundreds of people there have attended a council meeting to protest a giant mosque in Mooresville, and they were not told about it. Take a listen.
Examine closely whether the building of this mosque is right for this community. I personally say no to Sharia law and this Muslim center.
How can you serve and protect us when you can't even tell us about a proposed mosque in our backyard?
It was a full house tonight at the Mooresville Commissioners meeting as the town considers a new mosque in the city that has been met with controversy. Many in attendance voiced their concerns about the new complex, with complaints ranging from traffic issues and a lack of transparency, as the potential property was not listed on tonight's agenda. The Board of Commissioner responding to those citizens tonight, saying the property has been approved for religious use since it was annexed into the town limits back in 1998. And they went on to detail how much space the building would take up and encourage the community to continue to share their concerns about any proposed project.
All right. And so now the local citizens are being accused of issuing hateful and conspiratorial anti-Muslim rhetoric. And they're all upset about that. The Islamic Center of Charlotte, North Carolina, says ignorance and bigotry surround us. These people would be funny if they were not so serious. Well, you know, I mean, if you don't want to be, like, if that's what you think about the good people of North Carolina, maybe you should take your mosque and go back to wherever you came from. Maybe that's the solution here. All right, 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, let's go to the phones. Carrie in Memphis, Tennessee, listening to us on KWAM. Hi, Carrie, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I thought I wanted to get into this Gen Z thing, why they can't buy a house in anything.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Well, one, they got too much debt already. They probably got college loans and student loans and stuff like that. But I tell you what, there's a wonderful clip from another guy that does his radio show over in Nashville, I think. He does the debt-free screams. And the couple is, he's 26, she's 27. He bought the house when they first started dating. $180,000 paid off in 32 months.
Wow. Well, there you go. Yeah, there you go. And that's the way to do it, Carrie, is, you know, if you do put your mind to it, I mean, it's going to be a lot of work, and sometimes it may mean working two or three jobs and maybe a weekend gig, but if you've got a lot of debt, you can actually whittle down that debt by doing exactly what you said. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Ron in Georgia, WDUN. Ron, what's on your mind?
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, and welcome. What's on your mind?
Well, we were talking about inflation, talking about the cost of things. And just for an example, before I get into some other things, do you have Ingles shopping supermarkets down there over in Memphis?
We do not. We have Kroger out here.
Okay. Well, Boar's Head. Boar's Head is a name brand meat. And 6 or 7 years ago, you could buy a pound of Boar's Head turkey for about $9. And I bought some yesterday. A pound of turkey was $15.48 at this store. And this is an up-brand type supermarket and handles Boar's Head meats. But anyway, that's inflation, and that's what's going up now. But this started when they raised the minimum wage. Now you have people that were working at McDonald's and Burger King, and these jobs were made for a teenager trying to get educated in how to, you know, handle their money, not for grown men that have three children at home. So now they're trying to live off of this kind of a wage. But anyway, they've increased the salaries now for burger flippers. And the burger flippers are now making practically $15 an hour, if not more. And I imagine it's more than that on the West Coast. But the professionals that were making in the $20 to $25 an hour back, you know, I'm talking six years ago or so, you know, their salaries had to go up. You know, because if somebody out here could get a general job and making $12.50 to $14.50 an hour, then they figured they needed to be paid more, too. And I don't blame them. I would, too, if I were out there doing that.
Yeah, look, no, I hear what you're saying there, Ron, and I wish we could talk longer, but the computer is going to cut us off here shortly. And again, you're right. Those jobs were meant for teenagers to work part-time. And that's another component of this. A lot of those jobs are just not available, and the kids had a very difficult time trying to get summer jobs. So, all right, hang tight, everybody. Hour three coming up.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Good to have you with us. Hour three of the big show. Dylan, everybody's dragging around here today, but we had the big book launch party last night, and apparently you guys had the after party. You said you were very kind, and actually Helen was very kind because she said, Todd, you know, I heard her whispering, we got to invite Todd.
Yeah, you were right next to us. We should have made it a little bit more inconspicuous.
I know, but I was tired, and I had, you know, I got to get up in the morning, and I had a lot of stuff to do. But man, we had a, what was your takeaway of the big launch party?
Oh yeah, it was big. It was fun. I loved the place that we went to, JoJo's Coffee. They have great coffee and just a good environment to have people in. If that makes sense.
It was a lot of fun.
A lot of good speakers. Just, you know, good fun.
People got to meet you guys. We had about 150 people all total in and out, coming and going. And then we sold a lot of books. People drank a lot of coffee. And there was a lot of fellowship last night.
And not a lot of sleep because the coffee was drank a little bit in the evening time.
You know, so. I didn't even think about that. I had iced tea, though. I did the iced tea.
I saw a lot of lemonades going around.
Nothing wrong with the lemonade. Nothing
not
wrong with that. But anyway, JoJo's Espresso, so kind to host our event last night. I know that State Senator Brent Taylor, who's going to be the new congressman from the 9th Congressional District, delivered some words. And a fellow by the name of Brad Less, who is running to be the sheriff. And, you know, we need a really good sheriff here in Memphis. And that guy, he just talks like a sheriff.
Very intense.
Right? He is intense.
You just kind of have to listen to everything he says.
He
forces you to.
He needs one of the, like, the state trooper hats, right? Yeah.
Chiseled jawline.
Oh, he's got it. He's like, my name is Brad Less, and I'm going to whoop crime's butt.
Yeah.
Maybe that should be the slogan.
Yeah.
I'm going to whoop crime's butt, and I believe he would do it.
He did look like the sheriff.
He did. We didn't even need, right there. Yeah, we didn't even need security.
No.
It was just Brad. He walked in, and people got like
his presence.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. His name is Brad Less, and he's running for sheriff. You know, election day here is tomorrow, and we'll find out our fate. Are we going to go the way of Michigan? God help us all. All that to say, though, it was a great time last night, and thank you for all of you folks who turned out. I wish I could have spent a lot of time with you. We were able to have a lot of fun conversations. It was just a lot. It was just a lot of fun. Folks were very excited because next Tuesday is the official launch of the Golden Age, and we're going to be doing a book signing at the Wolf Chase Galleria in Memphis on Tuesday. Before that, though, this coming Sunday, those of you that live in the Los Angeles area, I'll be delivering the morning message three times at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. That's the church of our good friend, Pastor Jack Hibbs. Afterwards, we'll be doing some book signings in they have a beautiful outdoor area. And we're going to be doing some book signings after each service. So we'd love for you to join us there if you're in Southern California this weekend. And again, next Tuesday in Memphis, we understand Senator Marsha Blackburn is going to be joining us at our book signing there at the Barnes & Noble at the Wolf Chase Galleria. So we'll be talking more about that as we get closer to that date. So anyway, all that to say thank you. And if you haven't purchased a copy, well, you can pre-order one. You can do that now by going to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and we'll be certain to get you a copy of The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. All right. I've got a question for you folks. We're going to play through some audio here because there's a lot of disturbing developments surrounding the rise of Islam in the southern states. And there were two competing city councils last night. You had the situation in McKinney, Texas, and then in Mooresville, North Carolina, which I believe, and if somebody can correct us if I'm wrong here, but I believe that is near the Statesville area, around the Charlotte area as well. Hundreds of people turning out to protest a proposed mosque there. Also in McKinney, Texas, a suburb of Dallas, where local residents are just up in arms about the creation of a mosque in their community. This is a local resident and an evangelist by the name of William Stephen Dietrich, and he addressed the council last night, Cut 22.
Good evening, Mayor Cox and members of the City Council. My name is William Dietrich, and I am an evangelist with Grace Covenant Baptist Church located here in McKinney. I share the gospel because I love the merciful God who has saved me and because I love my neighbors, but also as an expression of my First Amendment right. Muslims often say they are willing to abide by the laws of the land if they move to the United States. I had the opportunity to attend a dialogue between a Christian pastor named James White and one of the imams at East Plano Islamic Center, Yasser Qadhi. Yasser Qadhi made the claim that he and Muslims in general are willing to submit to the law of the land if they move to the United States. However, he made this claim while there was an active lawsuit from the Epic Mosque against a ministry that I am involved with named Testimonies of God. I was one of the John Does in the lawsuit. Epic Mosque sued my friends Jason and Landon and the rest of the evangelists involved for exercising their First Amendment right. We were not on their property. We were on a plot of grass that was legally determined as a traditional public forum. The case was dismissed, but now the leaders of Epic Mosque are taking it to the appeals court. The point here is that Muslims are actively trying to take away our religious and constitutional freedom. When Yasser Qadhi is in a room full of Christians, he says he wants to submit to the laws of the land. When he is teaching Muslims in his assembly, he says their ultimate goal is to, and I quote, "Our goal living amongst all of you is to wipe away your religion and to replace it with Islam," end quote. "Because I love my religious freedom to believe in Christ, who is the mighty God, who died and rose again, I am not in favor of placing a mosque here in McKinney. Their goal is to take over and place all that America stands for. If anyone wants to watch the video where Yasser Qadhi..."
Thank you, Mr. Dietrich.
Well, they just set the guy up there. Jeez, hello. So, look, here's the question. You know, you've got... And I, Todd Starnes, I hold a minority view on this, I do believe. But I don't believe that Islam is, in fact, a religion. I believe it is a political ideology, and it is very dangerous. And therefore, we don't need it here in America. As a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say that Islam is completely incompatible to our Constitution and our way of life. So here's what I suspect is going to happen. No one's going to have the courage to actually stand up and do anything about this on it from a legal perspective. They will use the argument that this is really about freedom of religion. We've heard that from lawmakers on the Republican side of the aisle. This is really all about, oh, you know, yeah, we know the Islamists want to cut our heads off, and you know they want to destroy Christianity, death to America, death to Israel. We get all that. They want to kill the Jews. They want to throw the gay people off the buildings. But you know, we got freedom of religion, so we gotta let them in. We just have to hope and pray they don't, you know, wage jihad on us. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's what's going to happen. There will come a time here. And again, when you look at birthing, the Muslims they're popping out babies left and right. You Protestants out there, I don't know what the heck's going on, but you're not having babies. Maybe we need some more of that Barry White music or Isaac Hayes. I don't know. But we've got to do something to fix this problem. There are more Muslims being born than Methodists in America. I'm telling you, this is a matter of numbers. I mean, it really is. When you look at what happened in Michigan, that's a matter of numbers. The Muslims know they've got the numbers, and they will vote en masse, and they will vote for their guy. Or the gal, if, you know, they're in a burqa. So anyway, people are just really, I think they're trying to figure out, how do we fix this? Because there will come a time, and we're seeing this, for example, in places in Michigan where they're getting rid of the church bells. They're replacing the church bells with the Muslim call to prayer 5 times a day. School systems are now adjusting their calendars to accommodate the Muslims. And all you Christians and Jews are basically being told to shut up and deal with it. So that's going to start happening soon in places like Texas, because the governor there, unbelievable, the governor there is real. Greg Abbott does not want to address this issue at all. Cut number 23.
And thank you very much for giving me this opportunity so I can come and speak in front of the council. I live in McKinney on Virginia Woods Drive, which is not that far from this mosque. And I tell you, the message of Christ is love for all. But we should not be deceived by this message. I love all, but I also question the intentions. What are the intentions of this mosque? When Christians become extremists, because somebody said all religions have extremists in it, I really believe when Christians become extremists, they save lives. They do not go and kill other people. I would question if there are not enough Muslims in McKinney and also have enough masks in DFW, then why McKinney has one more mask? Why? Other than the weird agenda of overtaking neighborhoods in the name of jihad and convert Christians. I think my Muslim friends living in McKinney cannot afford this millions of dollars of project themselves. This is must be a foreign funds who are working right here in McKinney, and I would question the intentions of those foreign funds in the McKinney. I do not think McKinney has even place for this agenda. I would ask my Muslim friends from McKinney also to stand against this foreign funds which is working in the McKinney area and for in the name of jihad and converting Christians. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kilton.
Yeah, I would just encourage everybody to do your homework on this, and you do need to do your homework because whenever the Islamists invade a nation, they do it to take over. It's not to make life better for the Jews and the Christians or the gay people. It's to take over. You will be forced to comply. I mean, that's ultimately when they take charge, that's the way it will be. And when you watch the Islamification of Congress, for example. So the question is, how do we deal with it? How do we deal with this? And this is something that I think the Republican Party especially is going to have to grapple with. The Democrats, and hear me on this, though. The Democrats may actually have to address this before us. And the reason why is their demographic, the LGBT movement, will be in the crosshairs of a lot of this. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Again, in the break, head over to Amazon, pre-order a copy of The Golden Age in bookstores next Tuesday. We'll be right back. All right, can we talk about Judge Jeanine for a minute? The New York Times did a big this White House is leaking like a sieve. Never seen anything like this. Judge Jeanine is, she's at odds right now with President Trump, and the president's really frustrated with Jeanine over this, the story about the reflecting pool. And I want to weigh in on this because Judge Jeanine is actually in the right here. You know, Judge Jeanine, at the end of the day, she put her hand on the Bible and she swore to uphold the laws of the land. And apparently she and the Justice Department were served up a bill of goods by Doug Burgum over at the Department of Interior. Now, according to the Times Insider information here, and I believe every single bit of this only because you understand why Judge Jeanine did what she did. Jeanine Pirro had it up to here with Doug Burgum. Now her future is on the line. As a matter of fact, Todd Blanch was asked about her future, and he says, well, the president has the right to fire her. Jeez, Lou. Everybody's looking out for their own behinds here. But the president had accused Judge Jeanine of folding like an umbrella and choking after she withdrew charges against a guy accused of destroying the lining of the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool. And he was angry because Jeanine had publicly demolished one of his narratives promoted by Secretary Burgum that vandals and not a contractor defaced a Washington landmark. The president also raged against Ms. Pirro in private on Monday, and then he raged a little to reporters. Rumors that she would be fired burbled through the West Wing. I don't think she's going to be fired. Then he raged a little bit more before hosting a high-drama face-to-face meeting with Ms. Pirro at the White House. Mr. Burgum had been invited too, so Jeanine came prepared. She entered the White House from the West Executive driveway in a bright red blazer that matched her fight-back mood, schlepping a white box containing evidence plus a black box with documents on wheels. After about an hour of intense back and forth, she emerged with her job intact. Now, during the meeting, Ms. Pirro, her voice raised at times, directly confronted Mr. Burgum, accusing him of misleading the president. She made the case that Burgum had promoted a self-serving cover story to conceal his own missteps. Mr. Burgum spoke less but did his best to defend himself. Spokespeople for the White House, Ms. Pirro, and Mr. Burgum did not respond to requests for comments. If you get down to the gist of it here, is that the people that were responsible, the contractors, botched the job. And when Pirro and her team got all of the information, well, they realized they did not have a case, because the document, actually this court filing, pretty much amounted to an indictment of the Interior Secretary, the contractor hired to repair the pool, and U.S. Park Police. Ms. Pirro suggested that Burgum had committed the twofold sin of failing to competently oversee the renovation and then prodded the president to accept the vandals did it story. Ms. Pirro said her staff had relied almost exclusively on claims by the Interior Department that extensive damage to the lining was caused by the former Olympic athlete and other vandals. But after reviewing thousands of pages of evidence, she concluded the department had rushed and botched the renovation, and that bad info from Park Police led her to cite tremendous evidence against the Olympian that did not exist. So there you go. And again, it seems to me that the president's number one ally in all of this is Judge Jeanine, who was going the extra mile to do her job and protect the president. The question is, what about Doug Burgum? Why does he still have a job? 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, here is Katie Britt, the senator from Alabama, going after the Michigan Senate candidate Abdul El-Sayed. Cut 28, please.
This is a sad day for America. I mean, the fact that this man could win an election is absolutely unbelievable. We know that this Democratic Socialist of America movement has shown us that they do nothing but hate America. We saw them actually on your very network talking about all of the things they wanted to see. No ICE. They wanted to see no police. They wanted to essentially do away with the government. No jails. All of these kinds of things. But let's connect the first conversation we had to this one. And when it comes to Iran and it comes to what's happening, he is actually a jihadist sympathizer. We saw him just 2 days ago, El-Sayed, at a pool party with Hassan Piker, who said that America deserved 9/11. These are not people who stand with us and for our values, and they're infiltrating from within. We have to make sure to stand firmly and say we love this country, we want to fight for the citizens of this country, and we want to make sure that there's peace and prosperity here and across the globe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's absolutely right. So look, there were a couple of other big races that caught our attention. You will remember this guy. His name is Sri Thendar, and he's Indian, barely speaks a lick of English, and the guy got his butt handed to him. He's a congressman from Michigan. He got beat by a Democratic Socialist. Anyway, this guy wanted to impeach Donald Trump. The guy was a moron, and he wore a really bad toupee, a really bad hairpiece. Cut 27.
I don't know.
What are the five gross points cities?
Well, look, I'm not here to answer a quiz. I'm here to say that I'm going to fight for the people of Detroit. I'm going to fight for my
constituents. And Gross Point.
And all of the Gross Taylor. Points and all of Taylor and every
E-course.
Part,
yeah.
Every part of the 13th District.
Okay, I'm just do this real quick. Gross Point, Gross Point Park, Gross Point Woods, Gross Point Farms, and Gross Point Shores. Okay. You know, on your campaign filings, it says occupation. Yours says United States government. Aren't you employed by the people
on the United States?
Yeah, I am. Okay, you fix that one. Okay, and finally, you're getting nailed with this one. The beagles. You abandoned the beagles, left them to die in their cages.
Oh, at your pharmaceutical testing. See, look, I...
I love animals. 13. That's that guy. Yeah, so he could not name any of the neighborhoods in his own congressional district that he represents. This guy is, but anyway, he's gone. He's done. Unbelievable. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Yeah, he left, if you remember, he left over 100 beagles and a couple of monkeys in a pharmaceutical testing lab that the guy owned. Not good. Not good. He's kind of like a, you know, like an Indian version of Dr. Fauci, I suppose. I mean, if you want to go down that path. Here also, I want to play some of this. This is, I want to go back to Al Saeed for just a moment. Cut number 26.
We need Democrats who have the courage to stand up to the power brokers in our own party, let alone Trump and his goons. We don't back down. We don't back down. We don't back down. With all due respect, if they go low, we don't go high. We take them to the mud and choke them out.
Yeah, and they will. They will do that. All right, Tommy Lahren the other day interviewing Pete Sessions, a congressman from Texas who's a Republican, by the way, and Sessions has co-sponsored House Resolution H.R. 9535. You say, what does that do? Well, it's called the Securing Agriculture's Workforce Act, and it expands the H-2A temporary visa program. So the whole point of this is farmers are saying they can't find American citizens willing to work in the fields, and therefore they need to bring in people from other countries. Cut number two.
So I just have to ask you, if this isn't amnesty, please tell me what I'm misunderstanding.
Well, the first thing I'd say is amnesty is when we give citizenship, and that does not do this. But let me go back a little bit, because it's really a story that needs to be told. I am a 32-year member of the Texas Farm Bureau. I represent a rural district, many cow-calf operations and dairy operations, among other agricultural types of business. The important thing for us to remember is that we are losing tens of thousands of family-owned businesses, not just in Texas, but across the country, because of the stresses and strains that come from a variety of factors. Notwithstanding, in Texas, a lot of people who lose their land for solar operations or AI to support data centers. But here's the bottom line. If we do not do something to turn around the loss of family farms, we will first go to corporate farms, and corporate farming will simply take over America, and we will have lost those things that are about family farming and communities. If we do not solve this, and we talk about agriculture being a national security issue, we will have to import our food. And it is literally to that point. We already are faced with heavy imports from Mexico and other places southbound. It is a national security issue that we have family farms, that we have people who can produce our food. And the families are stressed. They're becoming older. And the cost of doing business is driving people out of business. One last point. We spend a lot of time as capitalists talking about the stock market and how great the stock market is. Farmers and ranchers' stock market is in their fields. It is $500,000 combines. It is extensive tubes and piping and water. And they simply are struggling right now, just like anybody else, because of tariffs and the problems that we have with foreign markets. So I have joined G.T. Thompson, a very dear friend of mine, also fellow Eagle Scout, to say we've got to save our family farms.
Congressman,
this is about getting enough workers.
Congressman, with all due respect, I'm from South Dakota, an agriculture state. I come from a ranching family, and I deeply resent the narrative that family farms and ranches must rely on illegal aliens, otherwise they won't be able to survive. There are a variety of reasons why our farmers and ranchers are perhaps struggling right now. I would love mandatory country of origin labeling. You mentioned foreign products. I certainly agree with you on that point. But to insist that we simply need to have illegal aliens that are willing to work for less, undercutting the American worker and the American farmers and ranchers and helping hands that could make a good living doing this, if not for the influx of illegal aliens on these farms and ranches. I'm sorry, but I deeply resent that. What do you say to the family farmers and ranchers who have a legacy of doing it the right way, who don't hire illegal aliens and find your comments to be a little offensive to them?
Well, first of all, you're the first person that's met that ever stated that. The bottom line is we have tens of thousands of job openings right now in the state of Texas. We cannot fill them. It is hard work. It is getting up at 4 o'clock, and it's living in the right areas. And
Congressman,
we have
Americans
many, many
are willing
people.
To get up at 4 a.m., sir, with all due respect.
Okay.
I'm going to turn
okay.
it to my colleagues
well,
now, but I just deeply resent that assertion.
Yeah, she's got a point there. And again, here's what I would do, because again, the argument is we can't find Americans willing to do these jobs, so therefore we have to bring in people from other countries. Now, back in 2005, they were bringing in roughly 48,000 H-2A visa holders. All right, so those are the people coming in temporarily to pick the whatever they're growing in the at the farm. In 2024, that number had grown to 385,000 guest workers working in the farms. Now, is this true? Is this true that Americans are not willing to work here? Because I have an idea. You know, there are a lot of people on food stamps, on welfare in this country. Why don't we recruit people that are currently on food stamps? And I'll take that a step further and say this. Those are good paying jobs to a point. I mean, yes, it's hard work. You're working in the fields. But at the end of the day, those jobs pay upwards of $35,000, $36,000 a year. Now, is that enough to take care of a family? No. But I'm just telling you that if you don't have work, if you can't find a job, there are jobs to be had. Question is, I mean, if what the congressman is saying is true, that would imply that the American people, the unemployed American people, are lazy and do not want to go and do the job. And maybe that's a part of it. 901-260-592. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Sorry about that, folks. Got a little choked up there. These allergies are eating my lunch this week. My goodness. All right, so Denver City Council, they've got a big problem on their hands. We have the story at toddstearns.com, and I'd love for you to go and check it out. It's a hoot. The Denver City Council, again, debating the idea of this slavery acknowledgement, which we mentioned yesterday, and they're doubling down on all of this. And they believe that they should be starting at every city council meeting with some sort of an acknowledgement about how bad slavery is. Considering the fact, of course, that slavery was never an issue in the territory of Colorado or in the state of Colorado, which, of course, Colorado became a state many years after the War of Northern Aggression. Cut number 13, please.
Think about like my family's history, and my dad was a migrant worker and grew up working in the fields. And so I see this, and I also think of an experience of Colorado and of what like my family has experienced. And I'm asking, was there consideration of expanding or broadening to be able to reflect that?
No, I think we thought about it in the same way that we did the land acknowledgement, in terms of like foundational, foundational experience within this country. And so the labor being specific to those that were taken from Africa onto this continent, and that land, that labor being forced.
Do you know of another city that names a perpetrator group?
So like the phrase at the hands of white Americans, I know that there are a bunch of labor acknowledgments that talk about systems like white settler colonialism, but it doesn't talk about groups. Historically, you know, the family of labor acknowledgments tend to talk more about systems instead of groups.
Yeah. So, again, the language came from examples from all across the country that we had kind of put together. I would imagine that is probably uncomfortable, but in the conversations that we had had, no one had pulled that out specifically to say, "Hey, can we look at this language and do something differently?"
So anyway, there you have it. At some point, I mean, and again, they do the land acknowledgement. They want to do the slave acknowledgement. And I'm wondering, where do you draw the line? I mean, at some point, are we going to have, do we all want to acknowledge that, I don't know, smoking may be unhealthy for you? Or that driving drunk might be bad for you and for others on the roadways? Or what about cholesterol? Should we start the council meeting with some sort of an acknowledgement that eating an entire box of Ho-Hos might be bad for your health? Might lead to diabetes? Where do you draw the line? Is what I'm getting at. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Dylan, you know, next week we're going to be broadcasting our show from the FedEx St. Jude Championship Golf Tournament, which may be, what, the next to the last year? They're abandoning Memphis.
Yeah, next to the last year. It's a sad story.
This is crazy. They've been playing that tournament here for years.
Yeah, it's been a huge thing in Memphis every single year, and it's a great environment to be there. I mean, we're happy to be there this year, but who knows? I mean, I guess next year, I don't even know what it's going
to
be.
Yeah, tell Parker to hop into the studio here because I want to get his take on this as our sports guy. But again, this is sort of a shock. So what's happening here? So they're getting rid of so right now you've got folks like Scotty Scheffler coming into town and you know, they're hobnobbing and hanging out and, they've been doing this for a long time. And Parker, that goes away. What are they replacing it with?
It is really sad. As you mentioned, the PGA Tour has been a staple in Memphis since the 1950s. And I think they're still going to be here at some point, but you don't know what quality of players. You mentioned the likes of Scotty Scheffler here next week with just the top 70 players, a very exclusive event. And now with the change coming in 2028, it seems like it could be a B-tier event at best, which really hurts the economy that this event could bring.
Guys, I'm following it's just me. I'm reading too much into this. I just, you know, this has been a concern, I think, since the passing of Fred Smith, you know, the founder of FedEx. And there was a lot of concern. I didn't seem to feel or sense a lot of concern coming out of City Hall over all of this.
Yeah, I think they did a great job honoring Fred Smith in the last couple of years with the tournaments, and they've done a great job. But as you mentioned, we've talked about it with local sports like the soccer team and the Memphis Redbirds, and the golf tournament might now be the next victim of this.
So, yeah, so City Hall only seems to be concerned, Dylan, with basketball.
I'm not surprised. I don't think we're allowed to say why I'm not surprised, but I am not surprised.
No, I mean, it's, you know, literally we lost our professional soccer team.
Yes.
They left. Our minor league ball team, the Redbirds, which is what they're an affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yep.
They were getting close and that's not necessarily a done deal, but they could get the heave-ho.
Yeah. They're fighting for their lives out here.
They need a stadium renovation about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's crazy. True. But if it's the Memphis Grizzlies or if it's the Memphis basketball, and they got basketball hoops all over the place.
This is true.
It does make you wonder. What is it, even the football? They don't care about the football teams.
Well, they're trying to. They're trying to care about the football team.
They put $200 million into the Liberty Bowl renovation. So
the city didn't do that. The University of Memphis did that.
That's right.
That has nothing to do with the city.
Now we're back to zero.
No. Yeah, that's But look, the Memphis Hound Dogs. You know the Arena League.
That was whatever that is.
That's where we're at, guys. It's really sad.
I still need to make a game. I need to go out there.
I think they're done.
They're done now.
Short season over there.
That's such a waste. Oh, the Hound Dogs. That's so cool. That's like a Memphis thing.
We lost our NFL team to Nashville, for goodness sakes.
Yes. Everybody wants to move everything to Nashville. They don't want to keep it in Memphis. Or move it even further than Nashville. I don't even know.
Well, it would be nice if we just cared. And I think, you know, again, and you talk about basketball, even the Memphis Grizzlies, there have been some rumblings. So, yeah. I don't know. We'll see. It's a tough situation. Memphis got to get its act together. And that's coming out of City Hall. They should have been all over this FedEx St. Jude Championship. What a disappointing story that is. All right, folks, got to scoot out of here tomorrow, noon o'clock, right back here at the Todd Stearns Radio Show. In the meantime, head over to toddstearns.com. Be sure to check out all of our great content, all of our great stories. Folks, get out there. Be safe today, America.